We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, October 19th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, we'll talk with Dr. Sol Neely, this week's Evening at Egan speaker, and the topic is zombies. We'll listen to an interview I did with A Tribe Called Red performing tonight at Centennial Hall. Troy Quinn, music director for Juno Symphony, will be here, and Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up will be here with Arts Up. Those interviews coming up, along with highlights from the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in place of National Native News today, while Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. And looking at the weather today, showers tonight, lows around 37, and showers tomorrow, highs near 40.
From the 2017 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage, I'm Christine Trudeau.
Will you stand with me as I continue my hunting? Will you stand with me as we all continue our subsistence activities?
That's Krissa Passingock, the youth keynote speaker for the 34th Annual Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage this week. Monday, he was personally recognized by Alaska Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. At 16, Passingock came under the national spotlight when Paul Watson, of Sea Shepherd fame, criticized the Siberian Yupik subsistence hunter on a recent whale kill he'd made after posting about it to social media. Watson goaded hordes of followers to attack Passingock on social media. The Elders and Youth Conference leading up to AFN saw record numbers this year, nearly doubling the previous years, going from 1,200 last year to close to 2,000 pre-registered, according to First Alaska Institute's president and CEO, Elizabeth Medicine Crow. Elders and Youth events included workshops on tanning and traditional jewelry making and immersion sessions in Indigenous languages, and a special teen dance concert featuring A Tribe Called Red. The conference wrapped up passing 7 resolutions covering subsistence hunting and fishing rights, adjustments to corporation tax exemption dividends, and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer rights. Also leading up to the convention, the AFN sponsored a conference on tribal leaders. Now in its 6th year, the large tribal gathering provides a common forum for more than 200 federally recognized tribes in Alaska, nearly half of the total number nationwide. This year's message was clear right away when the tribes were greeted by nearly the entire cabinet of Governor Bill Walker. And each of them, from corrections to commerce to public safety, was prepared with a list of items they were prepared to cooperate with tribes on. Corrections Commissioner Dean Williams said it was, quote, completely unacceptable and wrong that 3 out of 4 Alaska Natives who get out of prison end up back there. He's hoping for agreements with tribes to take over probation programs, and he's looking to revamp the halfway house system. The Environmental Conservation Deputy Commissioner Alice Edwards expects to soon grant health certification that will allow elders in public care facilities to be fed traditionally processed seal oil. Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth said the state wants to do more for village law enforcement programs. They want to give village police officers and tribal police training in evidence gathering. She said her staff has been hard at work drafting sovereign immunity waiver agreements with tribes. At the Conference on Native Law on Tuesday, Lindemuth gave the first detailed description of the administration's position on tribal banishment. She said that any time the state learns a person has been banished and it is related to domestic violence, the state becomes involved in any protective order. But often, she says, the banishment occurs because the village can find no other option to deal with a drug dealer or bootlegger. The state needs to help the village find more tools to keep their communities safe, and that includes tribal courts and tribal police. But as far as the rights of the person being banished are concerned,
in most instances, what we're talking about with a banishment order is the person who's being banished or excluded from a community may feel like their civil rights were violated. That's really a civil matter rather than a criminal matter. The state's not in the business. We have limited resources. The state's not in the business of running around protecting an individual's civil rights.
At least 3 Alaska tribes are known to have banished people during the past year. The Dena'ina Convention Center in Anchorage has metal detectors at each gate, and AFN organizers say there may be lines at times waiting to get in. On the agenda for an unspecified time during the first day on Thursday is an appearance by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott are also on the Thursday morning agenda. From Anchorage, Alaska, I'm Christine Trudeau.
The AFN newscast produced by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation and Native Voice One. Funding support from South Central Foundation, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, Shalisto Corporation, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Manalik Association, and the Rasmussen Foundation. This is a production of KNBA, Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And my first guest today is joining us from the University of Alaska Southeast, Dr. Saul Neely, who will be this week's Evening at Egan speaker. Thanks for talking with us today, Saul.
Great. Thanks for having me.
I understand that the topic of your talk tomorrow is zombies. Does that mean that zombies are real?
Yeah, so zombies are a cultural phenomenon, a social phenomenon that are intended to be read. We read monsters as the monsters are reading us.
So what do you teach at UAS, and how did you become the subject matter expert on zombies?
Well, I do a lot of work in literary theory and cultural studies. I did my PhD at Purdue University in their philosophy and literature program, which is where I first became interested in zombies. I had a friend there who was writing her dissertation on zombies, and at the time I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. You can't do that. be serious. But then I moved here in the fall of 2009, and I was helping a colleague of mine move, and I happened to catch an interview with George Romero on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And I was pretty intrigued by what he had to say about the cultural production of monstrosity. And I started getting into his films, and I realized that George Romero, who really gave us the modern zombie in its sort of gory, abject, cannibalistic form, that Romero spoke very eloquently about culture, and that if you really paid attention to his films and some of his other things that he's since done, like comic books and whatnot, that he kind of articulates a coherent body of philosophy. And so that's what really intrigued me was, one, the cultural production of monstrosity, and also how the zombie figure then becomes an adaptable literary figure who intends meaning as varied as it can be grotesque.
So in the blurb, it says that you're going to be tracing the genealogy of the zombie from its origins in Haiti. So you've mentioned George Romero, and he sort of is the mastermind behind our current view of zombies, but what was the original zombie? What was its role in Haitian culture?
Well, I think as I address that question right now and also tomorrow night, I will emphasize that I approach the genealogy of the zombie from its origins in Haiti less from an anthropological point of view and more from a literary point of view. And literary theory, the work I do, is an interdisciplinary endeavor, so there are ethnographic features to articulating this genealogy of the zombie, but I don't do it anthropologically. And so when I look at the role of the zombie, I see it contextualized in a very rich syncretic religious tradition that was formed through, sub-Saharan West African folk traditions that were brought over through the diaspora of slavery. And there it gets articulated under those very severe contexts. I think what's interesting is that a lot of the zombie phenomenon in Haitian culture is preserved through secret societies. And so we don't really know a lot, except for what certain ethnographers like Zora Neale Hurston or Wade Davis have brought back to us. And so when we study this in my class, because I'm teaching a zombies class this semester, we look at Zora Neale Hurston's book, Tell My Horse, in which she talks about folk culture in Jamaica and Haiti, with most of her attention to Haiti. One chapter she gives to the zombie phenomenon. She actually photographed a zombie when she was there. And then we look to Wade Davis, who wrote Serpent in the Rainbow, which has nothing to do with the movie. The movie was ostensibly derived from Wade Davis's book, but his book is much more rich in insight and wisdom. And there, in that context, we see the zombie in a richly storied and yet enslaved culture. Haiti was the first free black republic in the Western Hemisphere. And that was just a real thorn in the side of American imperialism at the time. And so in the early part of the 20th century, the Marines invaded Haiti and installed a kind of neo-colonialism. And it's through all of those historical stages that Haiti has passed through that the figure of the zombie has become articulated. So it's a really fascinating aspect. I'll tell you one more story real quick.
Sure.
So Wade Davis, he was an ethnobotanist who was pharmaceutical companies asked him to go down to Haiti and discover the secret of the zombie phenomenon. They assumed that it was plant-based. And so they sent him down there, and he got really involved in the secret societies at, to some danger to his own life. And in the end, he basically was received the secret potion that enables the zombie phenomenon, that makes somebody appear like they're dead so that they can be brought back and then administered a second kind of poison that keeps them in this hallucinogenic slave state, which is what we call, you know, the zombie phenomenon. And he gets all of this material and he brings it back to the United States and he begins to experiment with it, and he discovers that it doesn't work in the same way as it did in Haiti. And that led him to this insight that story is irreducible, that it was the zombie phenomenon in Haitian culture is not just biology, but it requires that really intense context of story as well. And I think that's really fascinating from my perspective on literary theory.
I think it's fascinating too. That's really interesting. Now, zombies have obviously had a big impact on popular culture, especially recently with The Walking Dead, et cetera. Will you be delving into that during your talk?
Yeah, I will a little bit. Most of my talk will pass through three stages. I'll talk about Haiti first, and then I'll talk about George Romero. And it's really surprising to me when I teach this class on zombies at UAS, I survey my students at the beginning of the semester, and very few people have actually engaged his films. And to me, that is popular culture, so I'll definitely be addressing Romero. And then I'll be addressing what I call post-Romero exploitation films. These were sort of the grindhouse cinema films of the 80s that were derived from Romero, but don't have any kind of clear political allegory as a feature of their commentary. In these exploitation films, it's just, as T.S. Eliot would say, a heap of broken images. You know, there's nothing redemptive, there's nothing meaningful in the end to the spectacle of carnage you see sort of unfold on stage. And I actually think that's very ethically significant and rich, and I'll talk about that tomorrow night as well. But then I will move a little bit at the very end to talk about a couple of my favorite, more contemporary zombie films. One is Dead Girl, and I had an article published on that recently. And then the other film I'm very interested in is called Pontypool, and it is not a traditional zombie film in any sense. The zombie contagion is spread not through bites or consumption. It's actually spread through the ear. It's spread through our own commentary with each other, and it's a wonderful satire on, like talk radio and those kinds of things.
That's a really great twist. I like that. That sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand your talk will be a multimedia presentation, so what kinds of fun stuff do you have planned?
Well, I have a 2 gigabyte PowerPoint presentation right now.
Not 2 gigabytes.
So there's just a lot of embedded film clips and sound effects and just fun things like that. I'm wrapping up the presentation right now, and I've got to stop because I just want to build it and build it and build it. You know?
The PowerPoint nerds are going to be freaking out about the size of your file.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the IT people at UAS are already freaking out about it.
All right. One last question. Is this presentation going to be scary? Are there any disclaimers that we should share?
Well, I do have a parental guidance. I saw a friend of mine in town, and he asked if his 12-year-old son could handle it. And I said, probably at 12, but I do show clips, you know, just a couple of very short clips from some of the more gruesome exploitation films, you know, lots of disembowelment and, you know, intestines.
But the good stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff, exactly. The stuff that makes us turn our eyes away from the screen. And so there's always that possibility of turning your eyes away from the screen.
All right. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. Saul Neely. He's the Evening at Egan speaker. The topic is zombies. The talk is Friday at 7 o'clock in the Egan Library on UAS campus. It's free and open to the public. Will there be any snacks or brains?
Boy, I don't know about that, but there will definitely be a lot of the Halloween spirit, I think.
Cool. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, that sounds good. I hope people will show up and bring their sense of humor.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. So thanks for being on the show today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
It's new member month, and Juno Jazz and Classics is bringing Postmodern Jukebox to Juno. Coincidence? We think not. Let's celebrate these two exciting events by dressing up and meeting up at Amalga Distillery, Sunday, October 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m. 21 and over, please, and cocktails available for purchase. We'll have some new member gifts to distribute and can answer any and all questions about membership. Also, tickets are still available for the show at all the usual outlets. See you Sunday, October 22nd at the distillery.
You're listening to the music of A Tribe Called Red. They are performing tonight at Centennial Hall, and earlier today I was lucky enough to have a sit-down with them, and they gave me with this an interview that I'm going to share with you next here on a Juno afternoon. I'm speaking with the one-of-a-kind hip-hop electronica group A Tribe Called Red. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, would you both please introduce yourselves and say where you're from?
My name is Tim Hill. I go by the producer name Toolman. I'm from Six Nations Reservation in Southern Ontario, and I'm a Mohawk man.
That's Toolman spelled with a two.
That's right.
I like that. And how about you?
My name's Bear Witness. I'm Cayuga, also from Six Nations, but I grew up in Toronto.
And how long have you been performing, touring, and putting out albums as a group?
About 10 years now. Since we started the Electric Powwow Party, that's what led to A Tribe Called Red. So that party that started in Ottawa, yeah, that's about 10 years ago now. But our first music came out about 7 years ago now.
So from my standpoint, it seems like what you make, your sound, the visuals, all of it is really unique. Is there a word for your genre or a word that describes your music, your performances?
In the early days, the word electric powwow got thrown around. Electric powwow, that's the name of our night. The word powwow step got thrown around a lot. But that
like
was because
dubstep,
yeah, because we started, we were doing a lot of dubstep at the time. So that doesn't really apply to what we do now so much. But it's like indigenous club music, I guess would be a good way to put it now.
The concert is tonight. When we come to the venue and your set begins, and that's after Woosh Jane dancers, who you don't want to miss. They're awesome. What will we see on stage? Can you paint us a picture of your setup for those who've never seen it before?
There's a lot of visual right at the hop, you know, like Bear is a filmmaker, so there's like a lot of film being showed on the screens, and then DJing and then also dancing. And there's a little bit of a live aspect to it as well.
The films that you show up on the screens, based on what I've seen, I've never seen you guys perform before. This will be the first time for me. But what I've seen in videos is that it's a little bit of like tongue-in-cheek clips from movies and like old westerns and things like that. You want to talk a little bit about why you show what you show on screen?
Yeah, it's something that began in my own art practice before A Tribe Called Red, as an experimental filmmaker, using found footage or stolen footage of misrepresentations of indigenous people in the media. And finding ways to, they kind of operates on a few different levels. On one, you're kind of giving these images new lives and saying, this doesn't have to be just a negative thing. We can laugh at it. We can enjoy it. From an indigenous perspective, a lot of us, including myself, growing up not having representations of ourselves within the media that were made by ourselves, you gravitated to things that you could find strength in, that you could make your own. A main character I focus on is Billy from Predator movies, and kind of taking him as this really powerful, strong character in the movie who fights the Predator head on, who gets Arnold Schwarzenegger out of the bad situations, even though he is a one-dimensional, stereotypical, kind of racist depiction of an indigenous person who holds his medicine pouch and stares off into the trees. He was a really powerful character and something I drew strength from as a kid. So that's kind of one level, is taking these characters out of their context. At the same time, from more of a non-indigenous perspective, it's confronting people with these images in a way that they're not expecting it. And like you said, kind of tongue-in-cheek, we can laugh at these images. They don't have to carry the whole negative weight. But at some point, you realize that you are being confronted with these very negative stereotypes. And one from that perspective I like to talk about is from Back to the Future 3. I've had more than a few people come up to me and they're like, oh, yeah, that scene when Marty runs into the Indians, that was so funny. I always thought, and then I realize now that it's racist. So it's just ways of confronting people with these images in a non-confrontational space.
It's pretty awesome. I really like what you do.
Thank you.
I watched the video for one of your more recent tracks, Indian City, and it is just so visually stunning. The dancers, the dancing, the clothing, the colors, it really blew me away. Would you talk about the making of that video?
Yeah, it was always kind of a thing of ours to like to expand on the hallucination and it being like a I don't know how to exactly explain this, actually.
Well, who is the hallucination?
The hallucination are a group of like-minded people in the future, I guess, and we based our whole album off of, and we live off the earth and same social ideas, same everything. Basically, we're all connected together, and
Like a lot of the stuff that we do, it exists on a number of different levels. So it started from the poem that John Trudell wrote for our album called The Hallucination. And in it, he describes a dream reality, a dream nation consisted of people who, like Tim was saying, were willing to follow kind of the ideals that he lays out in his work about remembering and recognizing what it is to be human and remembering how to treat other people like humans. That's kind of what he was writing about. And we took that and turned it into this kind of fantasy sci-fi world future where the hallucination are a group of people who have broken off into their own earth-based way of living. Kind of going back to the origins of a lot of people in North America come from the mound builders in like the Ohio Valley and in that area. So it was kind of ideas of going back to those original ideas of how people survived in North America. What the video of Indian City is the kind of real time version of that vision. And that this hallucination movement that was dreamed about in the future started now, and it started with a dance party, and it started with these ideas of celebrating culture, of sharing culture in a way that, again, was non-confrontational. It wasn't about a war. It wasn't about an uprising. It was about just trying to be ourselves, show ourselves in the way we want to be seen, and that being a political act. So that's kind of what's happening in the video for Indian City, is that we're seeing these street dancers performing up against the traditional dancers and in a very, very colonial space in Toronto. You know, it's a Fort York memorial. And it's a space where you can imagine that at that time when Toronto was being first colonized, where Indigenous people were, you know, there was usually like camps outside of the big forts and stuff. So it was kind of taking over that space and using those initial ideals of the hallucination to take over that space.
That is really cool. That's beautiful. I didn't know the backstory of the video, so that's why I asked. It's kind of like behind the music video. That's cool. It gives a lot more meaning for me, and I already really liked it a lot. And what's behind the name of the song Indian City?
I think that, when we were making the song, I just named it that. And the term Indian, and for us, is like... It's something that I grew up with, and it's something that I've always like I don't necessarily like pull it out all the time or it's anything, but it's something that, you know, I've either called, you know, like when I'm around like my brothers or sisters or my family or anything like that, like we still use that term. And I know that, you know, like in today's society, it's not really being used like that anymore, and it's cool, like it, like, you know, being called Indigenous or Native or however you want to put it. But yeah, for me, like I just called it that. I think it's just, or we wrote it down like that, is just like just based on the feeling of it, and I think we just drew inspiration from it, I guess, like for a lot of stuff on it. But the name stuck. Yeah,
I like it too. Now, you've worked with some big names on this last album, your most recent album that was released last year. You've got Yasiin Bey on there and Saul Williams, among many others. How lucky did they feel to get to collaborate with you?
I don't know how lucky I felt.
Were you meeting them for the first time, or are they longtime fans? Have you worked with them before?
All different, kind of across the board. Yeah. Some people, we were meeting them for the first time. Some people we didn't work in the studio with all the time. With Yasiin, it was a kind of a process over about a year.
Right? Yeah, about a year, yeah, for sure. Yep, it was definitely a year.
It's from like first meeting him in a shoe store, kind of chance meeting, kind of chance planned meeting. our tour manager, Buddha, is a DJ as well, and producer and photographer and multi-talented guy. I'm kind of going overboard because he's standing next to me. but he's the DJ for Narsi, the other MC on the R.E.D. track. And Narsi, his real name is, or his first name is Yasiin. So both Yasiins had met previous at shows and performing together. And so when Yasiin Bey was in town, Narsi and him were hanging out, heard that we were in town, and was like, hold up, you guys, stay at that shoe store you're at for a few more minutes. I got somebody I want you to meet. And he brought Yasiin Bey down, and these guys ended up hanging out in the studio with him after the show, just kind of playing tracks, and the idea grew really quickly to work together, but it still didn't define any sort of thing. And then playing a big show in Montreal a while after that, Oshiega, again, Yasiin was just in town and came out on stage and kind of freestyled on top of our Electric Powwow drum song. And about 6 months later, we managed to get him in the studio and spent like a solid studio session with him. But it was just that one day with the two of them in the studio and banged out the track with them.
Yeah, it was a pretty surreal, how it all came about. It was pretty like it was unexpected. A lot of it was, even right down to working with him and like his process and stuff like that, and getting to see like a lot of like. Things that we've only heard of that he does, like pulling out a red microphone that he only records with that, Just a lot of like gems and jewels, like how he writes, his process, and just how much of a brilliant guy he is when it comes to like creating music as well. And yeah, and even like how even Narsi pushed him even like to be even better on the song. So it was like it was a really good learning experience working with him.
Very cool. I'm a longtime fan of Yasiin Bey. And then I love the spoken word from Saul Williams on the track The Virus. Mm. That was really cool. And then you mentioned that poem by John Trudeau, and that's recited on the album as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for our listeners, if you haven't heard the album and you're coming to the show tonight, take some time to check it out. Listen to, from start to finish. It's really cool. How did it feel to get so much support from that community of artists and musicians?
I mean, amazing. it was something that we had planned. You know, we wanted to have a collaborative album this time because everything we had done before was just us as electronic producers in our living room, basement studios by ourselves doing our thing. So right away, the idea to expand what we were doing, you know, and really push ourselves to work in new ways. And the best way to do that was to collaborate with a whole bunch of different people and have to, you know, to find how that would work for us since we had never done it before. What was that even going to look like? And our first collaboration on the album really set the tone for us. And we're incredibly lucky. We worked with a good friend of ours, Lito Pimienta, and who just won a Polaris prize in Canada about less than a month ago. Huge award. She's an amazing, amazing artist. And she is such an artist with a vision and a really strong vision of her work. And she knows what she wants to get out of a session. So she came in and just, you know, took over. And it made our collaborative process going forward from that really easy, because we had somebody who was super assertive about what she wanted to do, and we were able to follow her lead and find our place within that. You know, we kind of grew from there with the rest of the album.
Yeah, and like, yeah, like getting that training and just being equally happy. Like, we made each other happy with the song, and we loved the way it turned out. Yeah, it was the perfect way to like to kind of foreshadow or even just set the bar as far as like us working with everyone else. And we worked with a lot of friends on this record, and every process was different. So we had to adapt to everything. So we thought maybe we knew what we were going to do, come into, and we worked with Lito, and we totally did it. And then that trend kept happening. So the able to adapt to new artists and great minds like that, you know, it evolved us. You know, it definitely, like, we've acquired a different skill every single time that we were in a studio with someone else, you know, whether it would be in a studio with Yasiin Bey or inside a fishing hut in Norway with Maxita Marak.
Wow.
So like we realized a lot of things with that, and we were just so blessed to be able to work with all our friends and our new friends that we've made over the process of this whole entire album that took about 3+ years.
Wow. I like that story about Lito. Shout out to Lito, strong woman leading the way, setting the bar.
Yeah.
And it's great that you're collaborating with so many excellent, high-quality artists and musicians. I know when you throw another person or people into the mix, it really adds a new level and new depth to your process and your sound.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
And along those lines, A Tribe Called Quest is a group that inspired your group's name, A Tribe Called Red. Any future collaborations with them in the works?
I think they just retired.
Yeah,
they just retired. They just did their last show, like, in New York on Summer Stage a couple months ago. But, like, if opportunity ever came, you know, of course. You know, like, we've already, you know, like, working with Yasiin probably, like, opened up a lot of doors for us. And, you know, we've met, like, members of the group already. So it's just, like, it's just, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, mm-hmm. then that's cool, too. You know, I'm a fan of their music, and we'll enjoy it. Is for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I love that last album they put out. Now, I understand that you're supporters of a movement called Idle No More. Could you please say more about that?
Well, Idle No More was a movement that started in Canada. And when was that? The 2013?
So I don't know. Time is beyond my comprehension.
Yeah.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah. I guess one of the things the tribe done to like help contribute that is that the tribe released The Road back in the day. you know, and as a song to kind of like kind of just to be a part of the conversation of Idle No More. And yeah, it's a super powerful movement that still exists today, but like it's kind of quieted down a lot. Nonetheless, it's still there.
Yeah, it's one of those. It started, I guess, in the prairies with a group of lawyers, women, mm-hmm. who first started the hashtag Idle No More, and it was really kind of like a rallying cry, I guess. You know, there's a long history, I think, of Indigenous people being quiet. You know, when you're in a situation where you've had everything taken away from you, the fear that the last things that you're holding on to will be taken away from you is real. You know, I think that's, you know, creates that culture of not wanting to complain about the little bit that you have left. But what happened in the past, you know, 10 or 20 years, or has been happening in Canada, was Canada coming after that one last little bit that people were holding on to. And directly, they took away the consultation of Indigenous communities over natural resources on their land. That was one of the big things that sparked it. But there was a whole bunch of things that happened across the country that kind of, right around the same time, that culminated in people coming together to say, we're not going to be quiet anymore. So really, Idle No More represented to me, it's kind of like a high water point where people, you know, really surged together to say from a number of different angles, you know, we're not going to be quiet about these things. We're based in Ottawa. We're based in the capital city of Canada. So when Idle No More was happening, there was a huge swarming to Ottawa, and, you know, to the point where you were walking down the street and you noticed the difference with the number of Indigenous faces you saw in corner stores, on the bus, because people were coming from across the country. We were also working on our album, Nation to Nation, at the time. So much of that charged feeling that was happening across the city, but especially in our city, that all that energy was going into the album. And right away, when the protests were starting, people were playing our music at the protests. And we started getting tweets at us to say, hey, where's our song? We need our Idle No More song. So The Road was actually the first song that we had really completed off of the Nation to Nation album. So we decided to put it out ahead of the album in support of the movement.
Very cool. What are some of your hopes for the future of Indigenous peoples and cultures worldwide?
Well, I guess like from an art perspective, you know, I guess it's great seeing talented Indigenous artists getting their shine and their spotlight, and you know, and being able to kind of go into the mainstream, or even just a lot more exposure, because they've always been there. You know, like I've looked up to artists all my life, Indigenous artists like Eulalie. So like working on with Jen Kreisberg on the new record, where she was a part of, was something very important to me, because that was someone who I looked up to as a form of inspiration back in those days. I wish more people heard of Eulalie, because they're amazing. They were an amazing group. But yeah, I guess my hopes in it is that I love seeing new Indigenous artists, or even the older, or just like rebranded, or whatever it is. Even just, you know, like they're getting their just due right now. There's some great music that's been there. And there's a lot of great music that's about to come out that I'm really excited to hear that. You know, I'm really excited that they can have that exposure now.
Yeah, kind of like what Tim's saying, you know, I think we're on a really good trajectory right now. You know, there's a lot of things happening in Indian country that's super exciting, you know. And I think the past, like, you know, 40, 50 years are actually starting to show some of the progress and change that people have been fighting for generations now. And we're coming into a point of having a lot of momentum and a lot of energy and power behind what we're doing, especially as Indigenous artists. You know, artists always seem to end up at the forefront of these kind of times, are kind of like a gauge almost. So with all of that momentum behind us, you know, there's a lot more to come. You know, people keep asking us when, you know, if there's more groups like us out there, or what we see the future of our kind of music. And I think we're going to stay as a genre of one in a lot of ways, because the people we're inspiring a lot of the time are going to be the next generation of artists. And I think what's going to be coming out is completely different from what we're doing now. We're not the youth culture. We're guys in our 30s, and I just turned 40, you know. And so I think what's coming next is going to be way more exciting and way more interesting than anything we came up with.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
No, I was like, for sure. That's like, yeah. Like 100%. Yeah, we're super, like, our ears to the ground to always, like, hearing the new artists that are out and how they inspire us to be better, or to just shake our head and, like, wow, these guys are incredible. Like, these guys are so much better than us. I can't wait to I love that feeling, you know. That yeah. Makes me really happy.
Well, you've paved the way. The concert is tonight, 7:30 p.m. at Centennial Hall. All ages. Woosh Jean is opening, dance group. And all of Juno is looking forward to it. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
Juno is beautiful. We spent like the night here, and it's the hospitality has been amazing. Everything has been great. We're super excited to go to and play this show, especially for our first time here, and to have this kind of reaction to like people coming out is incredible.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet.
Oh, what's that?
Wait till the doors open. Well, we at KTOO and all the Capital City are very, very glad to have you here. I'm honored to have had the opportunity to talk with you today. So thank you so much for your time and your thoughts, and have a fantastic show tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
You're welcome.
We are the tribe that they cannot see. We live on an industrial reservation. We are the Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them. We are the Halusa Nation. Our DNA is of earth and sky. Our DNA is of past and future. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the evolution.
This is Troy Quinn, music director of the Juno Symphony. Join me on Saturday, October 21st and Sunday, October 22nd at the JDHS as we open our season with a monumental concert of timeless classics. Sibelius' Brooding Finlandia opens the concert as young superstar violinist Fabiola Kim joins the orchestra to play Vaughan Williams' Serene, The Lark Ascending. Brahms' Third Symphony promises to tug on your heartstrings as the program comes to a close. Tickets are at Hearthside, The Jack, JunoSymphony.org, and at the door. Come experience the Juno Symphony. Adventure awaits.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And speaking of the Juno Symphony, I've got Troy Quinn here in the studio with me as my next guest, music director for the Juno Symphony. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Shelley. Great to be here.
Oh, thanks. Now, Troy, just for starters, how long have you been the music director for the symphony here in Juno?
This is my third season, Shelley, and we, as a Juno Symphony organization, are celebrating our 55th season this
wow.
opening concert weekend. Yes,
wow.
Incredible.
Were you around for the first?
I wasn't. I'm not sure I was born yet.
I wasn't either. Now, I understand you live here part of the year, and the rest of the time you live elsewhere.
Right, yeah. I'm sort of a nomadic at this point. I'm based in Los Angeles, but I travel quite a bit, and I spend about 3 months of the year here in wonderful Juneau. And so we had some good weather last week, although this is more concert weather for us. We're going to be performing some Nordic pieces, so this works.
That's great. Yeah, it's very moody right now, and I was going to ask if you find that the atmosphere and the sort of natural beauty of the Southeast inspires music and musicians differently than where you normally live.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, being in this sort of environment and having the beautiful grandeur of the landscape here inspires musicians and artists. I think that's the secret to Juno's cultural life and why it thrives so much here. And so what better place to make beautiful music in a beautiful scenery like Juno?
Yep, that and all the Plenty of indoor time in the winter.
Right, exactly. We have a lot of time to listen.
And does this atmosphere influence or inspire the way you conduct?
That's a good question. Certainly, you know, for me, I take in a lot of my surroundings, and it puts me at peace, actually, for conducting and for concertizing. There's a nice serenity. You know, we have a lot of traffic down in the lower 48. So being here and just being able to focus on the music is actually refreshing. It really is.
That's great. So you're here today to talk about the 2017-2018 season, and the opening concerts are this weekend. Can you tell us a bit about what we will see and hear at the performances?
Right. So, yes, we have our concert on Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday 3 p.m. It's a wonderful program. We've got Brahms' Third Symphony as our staple piece on the program. Brahms wrote four symphonies. This one is extremely energetic and passionate, beautiful piece of music. And we also are performing Sibelius's Finlandia, which is a work inspired by Sibelius as a sort of nationalistic, unofficial anthem of Finland. And so we're performing that, opening the concert. And we also have The Lark Ascending, a beautiful, serene pastoral piece by Vaughan Williams. We're bringing up Fabiola Kim, who's just arrived here today, graduate of Juilliard School, and she's played with orchestras in Germany and all throughout Europe. So we're so pleased to have her artistry here in Juneau.
That sounds like a big deal.
It is. Yeah, it's going to be a great program. So come on out and listen.
Have you worked with her before?
I haven't, actually. This is my first time. So it's exciting. Always exciting to find young, new talent. That's what we're always trying to do here in Juneau.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to listen. And speaking of listening, as you mentioned, the concerts are Saturday, October 21st at 8 p.m., Sunday, October 22nd at 3 p.m., The location is JDHS, and tickets are available. Where are tickets available?
Yes, you can get them at junosymphony.org at Hearthside Books, and you can also get them at the Jack. And
right.
They will be available at the door, but try to get them ahead of time because it's going to be quite packed.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. Always a good turnout for the symphony. Tickets are up to $35 for adults and up to $22 for students. That's the high end of the range.
Yes, yes.
And also, we will be broadcasting it on KRNN 102.7 on Sunday. So you can tune in to hear that broadcast on 102.7. All right, is there anything else you'd like to discuss while we're here today?
Well, I'd just like to encourage the community to come out and support this wonderful symphony. You know, we've got 60 members playing, and most of them local Junoites here. And so it's a wonderful opportunity to hear your friends, your neighbors, create beautiful music. And then come see me after the show. I'll be around on stage after to say hello to the folks, and hopefully you enjoy what you hear.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being here today, Troy. It's nice to meet you for the first time, and good luck this weekend.
Thanks,
good
Shelley. Leg. Pleasure.
You're welcome.
Bismillah. Hey. Showing living by the G code. What the fuck is Fleek though? Don't ask them, what do he know? What I forgot is better than whatever they remember. Never mind. I'm off it, it's quiet form. Time to put the temper tantrums to the quiet corner. Hush, that's enough, said the ruler. No suckers allowed to break bread or asunder. The daylight, lightning, and the thunder. The sun, moon, the stars, and the hunger. Abundance in bundles, blessings in troubles. Towers and tunnels, views and valleys, waves and peaks. Streaks you from sun, planet Earth. And ain't scared of no Mars attack. What type of bars is that? Stay off my chat. I'm up there corny riot garments, top five. Dying on and on them, super fly, slicker top, bro. Eagle diving on them. You, why you lying, homie? You won't play with my emotions, Smokey. Big chief heart rate, big beat, B-E-Y, I seen straight jacket come clean. Big said it was a dream, now it's a living thing. With you and living kings, I mean it, I mean. Solid with you and living, you know, with you and living.
currency on planet Earth. The currency is murder, you a man of worth. They say the day is coming, drumming that you can't reverse. Watch the banner burn before the cannon burst. Don't chase an illusion, the nation
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and it's about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. We are just listening to R.E.D. by A Tribe Called Red playing tonight at Centennial Hall. And my next guest is here with me in the studio, the one and only Nancy DeCherney, back again with Arts Up.
Hey, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
You just had the boys on here.
I know. It was cool. We pre-recorded that interview about an hour before the show, and it was just an honor to talk with them. So that's the big thing on Arts Up tonight, I would imagine.
Yeah, that there are a couple of other things to do today. However, well, you missed the Station 11 book discussion at noon, but stay tuned. You can do more of those. At 6:30, there is a really interesting book signing out at Hearthside in the Valley by a woman named Miriam Wagner. It's a book of poetry. You should go online and read her little description. She is a woman living in first transitioning survivor to live in Kasi, the traditional housing of the transitional housing for aiding women in abuse and rape emergencies. So it's being put out here. She spoke with me a little bit about how the poems come out of her attempt to write her memoirs, and that all she could do is write poetry. So anyway. Also, at 7:30 over at Perseverance Theater, they are doing the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, all of Shakespeare's plays, condensed to a 90-minute fun-filled, rollicking romp. And if you've never seen this, you really, I'm sorry. I think you get more times during the week to go see this. It's
you do.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's playing through the weekend.
It is one of my family's most favorite things to do, the reduced abridged Shakespeare's fun.
It sounds funny.
Yeah, you know, it's then you can feel like you know them all and whatever.
Crash course.
Yeah, crash course. Cliff Notes or something. Friday, there is a haunted house, and I think this goes all the way through the weekend, maybe, over at the fire training station for a howling good time. Come out to the Firefighters Association fundraiser. This $5 entry fee, and there'll be baked treats for sale and a second floor nightmare.
Sounds scary.
The first floor is kid-friendly. So that's from 5:30 to 9:30 on Friday night. There is an evening at Egan. This is also related to the big read thing. It's Zombies, Monstrous Allegory in a Time of Disaster.
Yeah, we had Saul on earlier in the show.
Does it
called
sound
in from UAS.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It sounds great.
Just in time for Halloween. So,
definitely.
Again, you could go see the abridged Shakespeare. And on Friday night from 8 to 9:30 over at the Elizabeth Peratovich Hall, there's the Alaska Beatdown 29. So a lot of fun.
What is that?
It's a MMA boxing thing.
They're going to have it in the hall, huh?
Mm-hmm. Guess so.
Wow.
All right. Bring a can of food for a ticket for a drawing and a raffle. So come on over to that. Saturday, Zippity-Doo-Dah concert from noon to 1, a perennial favorite for young families. It is at Northern Night Church, a lunch and bake sale available with donation. All the proceeds help support the Juno Co-op Preschool. It's always fun. So there's live music and such. From 4:45 to 8 p.m. every other Saturday, drawing group is at the Canvas. They say 4:45 because they slam the doors at 5.
Wow.
So you better get over there if you're going to be there doing that. There's a haunted house, again, from 5:30 to 9:30, the fire training station. 6 to 8 p.m., a painting party, Pumpkin Trio at Louise Miller's Fine Arts Studio. The complete works of Shakespeare at 7:30, a barn dance, the October barn dance from 7:30 to 11 at St. Anne's Parish Hall with music by the Taku Gales. Odette Foth Edgar will teach and call contra dances. No experience or partner is necessary. There is a slight fee. If you're AmeriCorps or something, it's free. Stop in there. And as we just heard Troy talk about the symphony, you can take that in. And I hope, did he mention the fact that there's a 7 o'clock talk?
I don't believe he did.
Oh, okay. Usually he has a 7 o'clock talk. The show starts at 8, but usually an hour prior to that, he has a little conversation. And I find it really helpful so I know what I'm listening for.
Yeah.
So try that. Also, plus, you get better parking.
Well, if he's not doing it, we'll sign him up for it. We're going to volunteer
good.
Him
we'll
now.
Just have
he's
him,
doing
yeah.
it now.
Thanks, Troy. at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., Gigi Monroe presents The Heels Have Eyes. This is at the Rendezvous. It is a horrific drag show. 21 plus, $8 covers. Scream Queens contest. Woohoo!
That sounds right. awesome.
It's going to be quite a night on the town.
That's the first I've heard of that one. I'm really, really glad you stopped by today, Nancy.
Sunday from 9 to 5, Beginning Jewelry at Color Wheel Arts with Rowan Law. So you can learn how to do beautiful, exquisite silver jewelry from a professional craftsman. Rowan's been around for a little while doing wonderful stuff. There's Adult Pickleball on Monday from 11:30 to 12:30 over at Centennial Hall. It's free every Monday in October. No food or street shoes. So anyway, get a little exercise.
What's pickleball?
I don't know. It's for adults, though.
Okay. And I guess they don't use actual pickles because it says no food.
Yeah.
We should have them on the show.
We should. Yeah, you really should. And because I think it's a nice option that Centennial Hall is offering for the community. Other exercise opportunities on Tuesday from noon to 1 is adult ballet out at the Juno Dance Theater. They do a lot of classes that are for adults, and I think as well as the ones for kids. Like there's a dance fitness class on Tuesday at 7:30 also. Let's see. On Wednesday, I think that brings us all the way up. She has this Wednesday being Alaska Day, but we know that was yesterday.
That was yesterday. You missed it.
You missed it. So,
cool.
Yeah, a lot of things going on, and you can get all this information at jahc.org or ktoo.org, and we hope to see you the night.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Nancy. It's always great to have you on the show. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Andy Klein will host. We'll talk with Lauren Anderson about upcoming activities at the Treadwell Ice Arena, and we'll also talk with Rhonda Garnier about Saturday's Zippity Doodah Benefit Concert for the Juno Co-op Preschool. Reggie Schapp will be here to talk about the upcoming Postmodern Jukebox concert and for Juno Jazz and Classics Festival, and Missouri Smythe will highlight music and culture presentations at Floyd Dryden Middle School. That's tomorrow, live at 3 on KTOO. And right now, we've got Woosh Kanadeyi in the house. They're going to be doing a red carpet concert starting at 4 o'clock in less than 2 minutes. And we're going to be streaming that on our Facebook page. So it'll be a Facebook Live event from KTOO on the KTOO Facebook page. This is a sort of a preview for the Grand Slam Poetry that's coming up this weekend. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Jeff Brown is the producer. On today's show, we featured all music from A Tribe Called Red playing their concert tonight at Centennial Hall. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.